I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now.
The biggest week of the year in mixed martial arts has arrived, and CBS Sports will be offering wall-to-wall coverage of UFC 239. Brian Campbell, Rashad Evans, and Brandon Wise are out at International Fight Week, so be sure to subscribe to the State of Combat podcast anywhere you find your podcasts for an exclusive interview with Amanda Nunes and a full preview of UFC 239 with predictions and new interviews all week long. Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast here on CBS Sports. That is Kyle Porter. I'm Chip Patterson. We're sitting here Tuesday afternoon, and as the countdown to the Open Championship continues, Kyle, we wanted to open today's show with a look at the European Tour, because this is the time where slowly but surely we've seen PGA Tour stars, they will decide to take their game overseas. This week we've got the Irish Open. The next week we've got the Scottish Open. The Scottish Open will get a few more of the American names, the Irish Open field, which we'll get to in a little bit, still with its fair share of stars. Are you starting to flip your body clock around yet so that you are going to be ready for the Open Championship? Like, are you starting to go to bed, have your children put you to bed so that you can wake up at 4 a.m. to be able to watch all the golf overseas?
Well, my children are not here in Orlando right now.
At the moment. That's true. You are still on morning drive. You can see him again on Wednesday morning.
Yeah, and I am getting up at 4 a.m., so maybe inadvertently. But no, it's interesting because I think one of the unintended, I think, benefits of the schedule is that it's really split up the calendar into the first half really being all about the PGA Tour, right? You get these three majors in the U.S. You get all the kind of big tournaments, the Memorial, your Players' Championship, Riviera, stuff like that. And then you get to July, and it's the second half of the calendar, and it really starts to turn to Europe. You know, they move the BMW PGA Championship to the second half of the year. They've got Irish, they've got Scottish, they've got, you know, now the focus is on the Open Championship. Other than the playoffs for the PGA Tour, that's really kind of the big thing that's left. You've got the WGC in Memphis. That's going to be interesting to see how that goes. But, man, I was just sitting, we were both sitting here like idiots waiting for each other to call the other person. But I was reading an article on Golf Week, and there were a couple guys, Brant Snedeker and Jimmy Walker, just talking about how, like, this new schedule is actually really hard because it's so intense and you're having to play so many tournaments right in a row, but they didn't take anything off the back end of the year, like the fall stuff. Like they basically moved the end point up, but they also moved the starting point up. And so they were just both talking about how, like, look, we get it, and we get that there's a ton of money involved and you want players to play a lot, but it's like, it's a lot. And I think you're going to see a lot of guys kind of take some time in the fall, which to me, I think, really shifts everybody's vision and attention to Europe.
So because the fall schedule for the European Tour is going to extend well into September, right?
Yeah, it actually goes into, I think it's November, honestly. I think the Dubai event that is their tour championship. So they're more on like the calendar, like they go basically January to November, whereas the PGA Tour goes like September to August, like going, like wrapping it around the next calendar year.
Right.
So it's weird that there's like the PGA Tour will be in its 2020 season.
As the European Tour is concluding its 2019 season.
Exactly. Exactly. But what that means is you're going to get your John Rahms, your Rorys, your Tommy Fleetwoods, who have not played a lot in Europe, are going to be over there more in the next few months, which I think is awesome. I love some of the courses and some of the places that they go to.
So we've got the Irish Open. Tommy Fleetwood will be among the players in the field for the Irish Open this weekend. Russell Knox, the defending champ. Shane Lowry in the mix. Matt Wallace, yeah. Louis Oosthuizen, Graham McDowell, Martin Keimer.
Fleetwood.
Yeah, yeah, that's what it's like. Fleetwood is the superstar here, right? Are you just picking him right now? Expert pick, Irish Open.
You said Fleetwood, didn't you?
Yeah.
I meant Rahm. Rahm's in it.
Rahm's in it. Okay.
Rahm is I was looking at this. Hopefully I don't have this on here for later. We'll just talk about it right now. I do have it for later, but we'll talk about it right now. Rahm in his last 9 European Tour events, like so I'm not counting WGCs, which are technically European Tour. I'm not counting majors, which are technically European Tour. I'm talking about just like your Irish Opens, your Spanish Opens, stuff like that. His last 9 European Tour events, 7 top 5.
I love that.
And 3 wins.
Okay. So
it's unbelievable. That's pretty crazy. I mean, I get that it's, you know, not as good as a PGA Tour or whatever, but that's wild. That's really impressive.
So we have to balance, like, that's worth something. It's absolutely not nothing, but I still don't know exactly what to assign to that other than just continued evidence for John Rahm. Like, it's almost, you take it almost as another data point for projecting him forward more than trying to change the way we view him right now, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I'd have to go back and look on what kind of course. I mean, my whole deal with Rahm is he just wins everywhere. Like, he wins in Dubai, he wins in San Diego, he wins on a Lynx course in Ireland. Like, he just wins. I mean, I think the kind of breadth of his game is, I guess, underrated. I don't know. And I don't know. You struggle with that because you're like, well, he doesn't play that great at US Opens. Well, he just finished T3 at Pebble.
Right.
You know? And so I don't know. I think in terms of like purely talking about guys whose games like match a variety of courses, I think he's right up there.
I think it is unfair for us to draw any broad comparison. Like, it is unfair for us to draw any broad statements on what John Rahm does in majors with only about 3.5 years of major experience, right?
Yeah, I think so. The hard thing with the US Open and USGA is it's just such a specific setup that you go and I think he missed like 3 cuts in a row or something. And you're like, that feels like something, you know?
So for John Rahm, I'm starting to in the like win everywhere model. I wonder if that's almost a Dustin Johnson like thing where you're just like, I don't know. He's really, really good. He can win anywhere. There are a lot of aspects to his game that when they're all clicking together, he's going to beat every single player that he's going up against. And so, again, like that's another, I find myself as we are trying to, you know, grab hold of everything. I think that Tiger Woods being excellent right now has brought to life how young some of the young stars are and how much more golf is left to play.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I mean, with Rahm, I think the part of the reason that his game travels so well is he's just has so many shots. You know, and we've kind of joked about this. Like, he thinks he's got like every shot in the world, and he kind of does. Like, I don't know if he's quite there yet, but he can play in the wind. He hits it so high. Like, he can do a lot of special things with his irons and with his driver that other guys just can't do. And I think you've seen sort of just the results of that over the years.
So is he going to do Irish Open and Scottish Open leading into Royal Portrush?
I don't know, because he played last week in Spain. He finished second. I don't know if he's doing Scottish. That would be a lot right in a row leading up to the Open. But he's the best player in the Irish Open field for sure.
What's your expectation for the Irish Open? What are you excited about?
Well, I mean, I'm excited about all those guys you mentioned. You know, one of the things we talked about on Morning Drive today is Fleetwood hasn't won in a while. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's kind of like been in some stuff, but he hasn't won. I think you have to go back to, was it January 17, maybe?
In Dubai?
Yeah. Was that it? Hold on. Let me pull it up because I don't want to whiff on something here. So the last time Tommy Fleetwood won a tournament was Dubai 2018. So that it was last January. But still, year and a half. Matt Wallace intrigues me. He's somebody that people are kind of have been introduced to a little bit. He's probably going to be on the Ryder Cup team next year. Really good player. And then the other thing about some of these lead-in tournaments to the Open is Open qualifying. There's three spots in the there's three available spots at the Irish Open. So top three finishers that are in the top 10, I think, that aren't already qualified, get into the Open Championship. So that's sort of an underrated deal, I think. We saw that with Doc Redman and Nate Lashley last week, and you're going to see some guys this week who aren't in that are going to get in, and it's going to be a big thing for them.
Do you think that there's any advantage to going over early to start playing those courses in terms of how it gets you ready for the Open?
I don't see how there wouldn't. I mean, like, do you want to go 3M, John Deere, Port Rush?
No.
Or do you want to go LaHinch, Scottish Open, Portrush? I mean, it just seems like a no-brainer to me.
Is that because of your own personal taste for the kind of course that you like to play?
Well, sure. I mean, it's more fun. Like, it's just a better experience. But also, I mean, you look at the run-up to Portrush, and it's like, okay, well, you're playing Travelers, you're playing 3M, you're playing John Deere. These are just all the same course, right?
Point and like, shoot. Point and
yeah,
shoot. Yeah.
It's just the same deal. And then you get to Port Rush and you're like, oh, well, that's not going to, you know, that's not going to do me any good. And so you're seeing, I haven't seen the entire Scottish Open field, but I know Rory's playing. I know JT's playing.
Doesn't Ricky playing? I feel like he always plays. Ricky, yeah. And isn't Phil usually a Scottish Open participant?
Yeah, remember when he dropped the trophy back in 14?
I had forgotten or about that.
13? I think it was 13. Let's see here. Yeah, Fowler's in. Terrell Hatton. It's a good field.
Are you going to get your eyes on any of the action at LaHinch?
Yeah. Have you seen this course?
No.
It's insane. So LaHinch, it's on the sort of the west coast of Ireland, and it's never hosted an Irish Open. It's hosted other amateur event, like big time Irish amateur events. But Paul McGinley, former Ryder Cup captain, is taking over for Rory this year as the host of the tournament, and he's not playing, so he's just like he's locked in to making this thing great. And he was like, "Well, why don't we? You know, they've gone to different like bigger." Courses in the past, and he's like, why don't we go to LaHinch? That place is sick. And but here's the thing, like, they call it the St. Andrews of Ireland. The population there, Chip, is 700 people.
Is it a lot of space? Like, is it 700 people and a lot of farmland?
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah.
But I've seen 700 USGA officials on like the greens at the night before US Open. I mean, there's nobody there, but it's a cool deal because like in the summer over there, everybody goes to these towns like this. And so in the summer, their population, it's 10X, it's like 7,000, like for the whole summer, not just for this event. So I think it's going to be pretty cool. Not just the course, which it has some just crazy holes. But just the town, the whole deal, I think is going to be pretty awesome.
Coming up on the other side, it's Tuesday. So we got some Tuesday trivia next.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
The baseball season is in full swing, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll talk waiver wire ads, drops, players to trade for, prospects who could make an impact, and everything in between. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.
All right, it's time for Chip to make all of the loyal subscribers of the First Cut podcast scream at their smartphones or podcast devices.
I try to make these.
I promise you, I have not done any research. I want to maintain the integrity of the competition. I will gladly be the dunce here if the dunce hat is needed.
Well, so Tuesday trivia today on Morning Drive, I couldn't think of, like, one of the questions was which president served as like the two-time honorary starter for the President's Cup. I couldn't even think of a president. It was unbelievable.
What was the answer?
Like, it was like, name a president, and I couldn't name it. It was Obama. Okay. I put 43. I put George Bush.
Texas.
Not yet. It was not my greatest performance. Okay. So these are all relevant to kind of what's coming up this week with the 3M Open and the Irish Open. Can you give me, Chip, Phil's last top 10 during this 2018-19 PGA Tour season?
Was it at Pebble?
It was at Pebble, but not the good it was at Pebble. The bad one. The one back in February.
Right. Yeah. It was at Pebble. It was at Pebble when he won.
Yeah, it was at Pebble like 30 weeks ago instead of 2 weeks ago.
Right.
Exactly. He doesn't have a top 10 since then.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I don't think it's that crazy. I've already transitioned him in my mind kind of like into this new position where you're more of a figurehead than an actual contender to win. And I'll be glad to be wrong when he does surge back and have some sort of awesome win that everyone's going to go crazy for. But it's been a long time since I've seen that man it's been a long time since I've seen him string together four consistent rounds without a lot of just yanking it into the trees and putting a seven on the scorecard somewhere. And you're not going to win tournaments or have top tens putting a triple bogey on the scorecard.
Yeah, I know. It's just, it's weird to think, like, telling somebody after Pebble, look, Gary Woodland's going to have more major wins than Phil's going to have top tens the rest of the year. You would have been like, what? That's insane. Like, that's stupid. But here we are. He's at the 3M Open this week. I don't know. He's just sort of like, I feel like we're in this sort of, there's a disparity between how the public thinks about him and how he should be thought about if you're looking at this closely. Because you're like, oh, Phil at a major. Yeah, let's see what happens. And it's like, I can tell you what's going to happen. And it's not going to be something that you're going to, but that's how it goes with big names. Like, we always get out of there. We always eject from, like, hoping in them way past, like, where they've actually gone downhill.
Right. And look, isn't that another part of just the professional golf tour? I mean, we've got to sell tickets. We've got to drive up interest. I think these are events where we need people to come and have the advertising dollars. And right now, Phil is a top commodity, even if his game has already gone the other way. And I would challenge that knowing where your game is going might also inspire you to really pump up the last thing that you got, which is your recognition. And not that that would be particularly calculated. It could be subconscious. But, like, if you're getting all this attention for 20 years of your career for the way that you're playing, and then all of a sudden the results aren't there anymore, then you also still have the opportunity to get that attention and positive reinforcement with commercials and appearances and your like calf workouts and your missed cut Tuesday flop shot tips. Like, not that I would think it's calculated, but the fact that one thing is going down while the other one seems to be continuing to get ramped up. I mean, Kyle, the man just had a pay-per-view golf event.
I know. Have you seen his fireside chat thing?
Yes.
The one with his mom. Did you see that one?
I did not see that one.
It's pretty good. He's like, he does it in such a way to where you're like, I think he's in on the joke.
Yes,
like,
I do too.
He is, but then you're like, he's like smart Michael Scott. to where you're like, I think, but I'm not totally sure.
He's trying to be funny, but he's not self-aware enough to understand the next levels of the joke.
But he's also like kind of doing that on purpose. So there's a lot to unwind. But no, I agree with you. Okay, you're one for one. Next question. This is a little harder. Who has the most Irish Open wins of all time? It's a four-way tie. So that's why I went with this, because there's any one of four guys you can name.
Is Paddy Harrington one of them?
Patrick Harrington is not one of them.
Is one of them in the field this week?
No.
Oh,
I don't think so.
Seve?
Yes.
All right, cool. Nice. Got one of them.
Two for two.
Who are the others?
Nick Faldo, Bernard Langer, and Colin Montgomery.
That is, I'm glad I was able to get one of them, because when you said none of them were in the field, my next guess was just to start running through the top Euros of all time, right? Like, you're just like, yeah, again, like, what was that list? Faldo, Montgomery, Seve,
Langer.
Langer, yeah.
It's like for the top seven ever, probably.
Yeah. That's a sick list. I mean, that's awesome.
It is. It's great. By the way, did you hear the thing on Sunday where Peter Costas asked Faldo a question, but he wasn't at his mic, and so Jim Nance answered for him?
No.
Oh, dude, you got to go watch it. It's unbelievable.
Play it out for me real quick.
So Costas was breaking down like Brian Stewart's swing, of course.
on the Konica Swing Vision.
No, he's just like locked in talking about how hooded his club face is.
Oh,
and
wow.
I mean, it's just awesome. And he goes to Faldo, and he goes, he said, doesn't that remind you of Trevino? Isn't there a little Trevino in there? And there's this pause. And in retrospect, it was Nance thinking about whether or not he should fake it.
In Faldo's voice.
And he said it was like half Australian, half English, but he said something like, hey, I guess you could say that. But like, the funniest part about it is that Nance like picked things up in his own voice like a second after that.
Did he acknowledge it?
No. But you could hear people in the background laughing. You got to go to here. Actually, I can just play it for you. It's on this Scratch Twitter account. Somebody called, and I heard it. I heard it. I was on the plane. I was watching, and I heard it happen. And I was like, man, that sounded weird. Like, okay, here we go. Hold on. I got my headphones in. I got to take them out. You ready?
Yeah.
Doesn't it, Nick? Does it look like kind of Trevino if he opened it up and cut it?
Yeah, I guess you could say so. All right, let's go over to 9.
How good is that?
Man.
How funny is that?
You got to know. that's only at the Rocket Mortgage Classic, right?
He goes, let's go over to 9. That wasn't Peter Costas, by the way. That was Gary McCord. I screwed that up.
Well, at least you didn't try to fake an accent doing it.
Yes. Okay, number 3, last one. We've got, where are we here? I think I clicked out of my Okay, whatever. I remember it. It's how many top 20s does Brooks Koepka have at non-majors this year?
Top 20s?
Top 20s at non-majors.
I'm going to guess zero.
He's got two.
The week before PGA.
Yeah, what was week he? Before PGA yeah. was Byron Nelson, and then he went T2 at Honda when Kevin Mitchell won.
Because where he's got a T21 somewhere in there in a non-major recently. Okay. So, yeah, he's got two of them. That's, again, like the T2 at Honda is that long list of the runner-ups where, you know, you're right. He has more major wins than he has non-major wins, but it's not like he's playing terrible golf only at non-majors.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I love the runner-up stat, and I think that doesn't get talked about enough. But also, like, I keep going to the stat where he's outside the top 50 in five of his last six non-majors. And I don't know. There is a world, though, and I you were on this before anybody, I think. There's a world in which Koepka's got, like, seven regular events and four majors, right?
Right.
So he's like JT, but with more majors.
And no, and on a completely, like, there is no debate if he has seven wins and four majors about who the number one player in golf is, right?
Of like, not just in golf right now, but in, like, this generation. Like, right. That, like, it would already be over.
Right.
Basically.
Right.
And so, I love that. And I do think there's something to him just being, again, I've said this a million times, but the major, like, contending in majors is exhausting. Like, it's tiring for me and you doing this silly podcast, much less, you know, being in the final pairing on Saturday and Sunday. It's a lot. And, I do have an interesting Koepka, major related stat that we're going to get to tomorrow in stat of the day.
Over under Brooks Koepka wins the rest of the year 0.5.
Well, he's gonna win the Open. The John Deere is a major, so he might play in and win that. I think he plays really well at Memphis, and that's a WGC this year, which it would be kind of weird if he won, I guess, the week after a major. I'll go. That's a good. I'll go over.
I'm gonna go under. I think Brooks is done for the year.
Okay, that's fair. I mean, that's the thing. There's only like seven events left.
Right. When I say Brooks is done for the year, let's remember that means that he's already got a T2 at the Masters, a PGA Championship win, and a runner up at the U.S. Open. Right. Like, to be done for the year, to not play another round of professional golf. He's still had one of the best years of anybody on the PGA Tour.
Well, and that's the thing we're talking about today. Because I keep hollering about, wow, this is so bizarre. And it's like, yeah, it's bizarre enough to be player of the year in 2019.
Right.
So I think, that definitely needs to be taken into account.
He is Kyle Porter. You can follow him at Kyle Porter CBS. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Kyle, thank you very much.
Thanks, Chip.